The multi-talented Stephen Van Zandt joins us on the WBGO Journal. Great to see you.
Good to see you, my friend.
You know, thanks, first of all, for being a longtime listener of the Morning Jazz program with Gary Walker on WBGO, being a supporter. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, he's the best. And, my alarm was set to him for many years.
Fantastic. Now, Stephen's credits, as you know, would take up the whole show, but let's start off with musician, singer, songwriter, producer, arranger, actor, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, lead guitarist with Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, Silvio Dante, of course, in The Sopranos, Frank the Fixer in Lilyhammer, Jerry Vale in The Irishman, his own amazing band, Little Stephen and the Disciples of Soul. He's also a radio host, has his two radio channels, human rights activist, and the focus of today's talk, educator. All year, Stephen, you've been holding virtual fundraisers to benefit Teach Rock, the organization you founded in 2002 to save music education, providing online music history courses and many other resources. So before we talk about Monday night's big fundraiser, you care so much about music education. My daughter's a special education teacher in the Neptune School District. Throughout this COVID pandemic, teachers have really had to step up their game, but they need help. Why are you so passionate about teachers, honoring them on Monday night, and the students themselves?
Well, I consider teachers right there in the same category as police, firemen, our military. You know, they are on the front lines in the war against ignorance. And that war is just as important as every other. And maybe more. And they should be treated that way. They should be supported of much more. You know, they should be making more money. They should be getting more resources. You know, they should be treated as the extraordinarily important people that they are, instead of being taken for granted, which is what happens most of the time. So you begin with that. And then as far as the music thing, I mean, music happens to be my thing, but we're a little bit broader than that. You know, we really, our curriculum is based on music history. But, you know, my passion is integrating the arts in general, not just music, but all the arts. They should all be integrated into the basic process of education. And we are just starting to have partner schools now, integrating our curriculum into every single grade level and every discipline. And I had a chance of visiting one, which we'll be talking about Monday night, Orangethorpe in California, Southern California, and seeing our curriculum integrated into kindergarten through sixth grade. Was the most exciting, one of the most exciting moments of my entire life. I couldn't believe the enthusiasm of the kids and the teachers. The whole game changes when you include the arts into the education process. You know, because a lot of kids are not comfortable with that level of precision. You know, the basic curriculum, which is, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math, it's called STEM. That's the basic, pretty much the core curriculum that's accepted. And our mission, one of our missions, is to turn STEM into STEAM and add the A of arts in there as an essential part of the process, not just some after school, you know, type of activity. And when you see it integrated, it changes the very, you know, fabric of education. You have, like I say, everybody's not comfortable with math and science and technology and engineering naturally. But they are naturally, they have, they're directly in touch with their instincts, with their feelings, with emotions, with their imagination. And that's where the arts, that's the world the arts live in. You know, in the arts, there's no wrong answers. You know, we ask kids, who's your favorite artist? Whatever they answer is the right answer, you know, and then we trace them back in order to you know, capture their attention, which is a challenge these days, keep them engaged. It's one of the basic three things we do. You know, we wanted to integrate the arts, number one. We wanted to come up with a methodology, number two, for these kids that are faster and smarter than us and have an answer on their device in 30 seconds, you know. And the third thing, of course, eventually is affecting the dropout rate, which is just an absolute tragedy and a scandal. I mean, close to 50% in the poorer neighborhoods, and 50% of those dropouts end up in the criminal justice system. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, so we try to, we feel very strongly that, you know, it's more important to teach kids how to think than what to think. And that's our mission, you know, right now, is to get the arts into the system on every level and have that combination, you know, science with art, math with art, you know, engineering with art, technology with art. And suddenly, you know, the kids are engaged, and we need to teach these kids what I call in the present tense. You know, we can't say learn this now and someday you'll use it. That doesn't work with this generation. It's completely out of date with their own sensibility. You got to give kids something they can use right now.
Right now,
you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so that's what we do.
You know, the Rock and Roll Foundation's teachrock.org. You've been involved for so long. Do you ever think about your own educational experience? Was there a teacher that really made a difference for you along the way?
Well, you know, I was a terrible student, I got to tell you. I mean, you know, I barely got out of high school. I was actually thrown out. I had to go back. You know, I kind of went back to graduate just to make my mother happy, you know. So I'm the worst example, you know.
But that's helped you probably, though, when you've done this, right? Well, what turned you off? Maybe, you know, has helped you connect.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's right. But I did have Mrs. Wojciechowski, our music teacher, was quite good, and I remember our librarian was quite hip, you know, which. You know, it was an odd sort of influence, but our librarian was very hip, and
you remember, you know, you remember, right?
Yeah, and it's just, she just, you know, she says, I bet you you're into Bob Dylan. I said, yeah, you know, and she says, well, then read this, and she gave me, you know, Allen Ginsberg and the Beat Poets, you know, turned me on to the Beat Poets and Ginsberg. Then turned me on to Buddhism, you know, and Eastern religion. And then, of course, you know, George Harrison was doing the same thing with the Beatles, you know, so that came from two different directions. Hmm. But, you know, making that connection between, you know, Howell, you know, and on the road, you know, Kerouac and Ginsberg and Bob Dylan was a revelation for me at the time, you know. Nobody was talking about that stuff, really.
You've never reached out to that librarian again, have you?
No, I don't even remember her name. I'm ashamed to say, but I remember.
I bet you she knows. I bet you she remembers.
She was cool.
I exposed him to all these great people. So yeah. Let's talk about this wonderful event that you have planned for Monday night at 8 o'clock on December 21st, as you and Teach Rock presenting Stand With Teachers, an hour-long online fundraiser, and you brought the heavy hitters in for this one. Tell us about the featured performances and the appearances.
Yeah, we got all kinds of people still coming in here. You know, Bruce sent a song, Jackson Brown, Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, Margot Price, Matisse Yahoo, you know, and we're going to have an entire jukebox, holiday jukebox section of the show. The whole show will be about 2 hours probably. And a lot of our young bands sending in Christmas videos. Tom Morello will be there discussing education. you know, we have, of course, we're going to have teachers talking about this stuff. And, you know, it's going to be both a little bit educational and a lot of fun, a lot of entertainment. And teachers, of course, come for free. Like always, anything I do, teachers always come for free. They just go to teachrock.org / stand with teachers videos. And they'll tell you what to do so teachers can get on for free. But it is our one big fundraiser of the year, so we're hoping to, you know, have people show their generosity, because our entire curriculum is given to teachers for free. We don't charge anybody anything.
That's fantastic.
And we don't receive any government money. There's no taxpayers are paying for this. It's all private, you know, money and donations, so.
And once again, you can go to teachrock.org, and that will send you to the page where you can purchase tickets or make a donation. Of course, tax deductible too will allow you to stream the event on demand for 3 days. So if you miss the concert, you still have it, you know, available to see it over and over and over again. So, you know, you've covered a variety of music with your programs, more than 200 free lessons online, from the birth of rock to the roots of hip hop, and you're working with New York City schools. But during this COVID, it's even picked up even more. You've had so much participation from teachers accessing Teach Rocks. So you've turned a real negative into a super positive because of these online courses. You've adapted to this online thing probably better than so many others.
Well, we just happened to be ahead of the game because we were online from day one, you know. We saw, you know, even though, you know, many schools are still, unfortunately, struggling, you know, to make sure they have the modern technology, you know, make sure they have, you know, the whatever, the computers and iPads that are necessary. We thought, you know, books are the whole book thing is on the way out. You know, it's too expensive. You know, let's save some trees, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, so we went online right from the beginning. So we were ahead of everything. And then when this thing hit, I mean, we were actually up to, I think, 250 lessons now.
Wow.
And we're, you know, over 40,000 teachers registered. We got all 50 states and we're in 100 countries. So it's really catching on. We only went public with it a year and a half ago or so. You know, so it's really kind of new for people. I mean, we've been working on it for 15 years, but we just, you know, we just went public with it about a year and a half ago. So yeah, a lot of people are really appreciating the fact that we had this thing already ready to go, and teachers are just very grateful because it's the one thing they say that captures the kids' attention and keeps them engaged, and that's where teaching has to begin. You know. You got to get the kids' attention. And, man, that's a challenge these days, you know. You can imagine, you know, that you have to give kids a reason to want to be educated, you know. Or else they're just...
What's been the best comment you've received through the years from someone that you say, that's why I do this?
I get it all day long, honestly. I mean, I all day long. I have teachers... We you know, on the last 3 years I was touring, both the Soulfire tour and the Summer of Sorcery tour, we allotted like 500 tickets for teachers to come to the shows, and we did a seminar, you know, a little workshop in between the sound check and opening the doors of the concert. You know, we did a little workshop for the teachers. So I was literally interacting with teachers who are on the front lines, hearing their needs, you know, listening to what they need and hearing their extraordinary gratitude for what we've got going, you know.
While you're touring.
during the tour. That's, so I was actually able to, you know, and I tell teachers all the time, you know, tell us how we can be better, you know. Of course, you know, we're always open to, you know, suggestions and you know, we keep improving everything as we go. But we really, we hit on a nerve that I didn't even you know, I was responding to the music teachers who had come to me and said that the No Child Left Behind legislation had this unintended consequence of canceling all the arts classes in public schools, you know, in favor of testing math and science, you know. And I was like, man, when are we going to learn that testing is not learning, first of all? You know, somebody has to eventually figure that out. Testing is not learning.
I agree with you. I always tell my students that I teach at a couple of colleges, and I say, you know, tests are very minor here. I want you to learn. What you score on this test is not the evaluation of what you have acquired here. I want you to be able to go from here. And so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. We got to be more practical. I mean, education should have always been that way. You know, how many times have you heard the stories of, you know, whatever, you know, football players getting to college and they never had a bank book, you know, this basic, you know, basic fundamental things of living. We just seem to somehow miss that, you know, and that stuff begins to connect, I think, with the arts. You know, that's where it all kind of begins. But just the practicality of life has got to be an essential part of the education process. And you know, we somehow ignore that, and I don't get it. You know?
You know, you've been very successful, but success doesn't mean you become a philanthropist. Where did this giving back come from for Stephen Van Zandt?
You know, I don't know. I feel very grateful. I say this all the time, but we literally were the luckiest generation. I mean, we will be known as the lucky generation, without a doubt. And you know, I mean, every day it gets worse. You know, every day we get luckier, you know, from what we grew up with. There was none of this insanity going on. I mean, we didn't appreciate it at the time, of course, but man, you know, the world has gone insane, you know, and we had some problems going on at the time, you know, we were like civil rights, you know, and, you know, but we were making progress. We felt like there was progress being made, you know, civil rights and all kinds of, you know, women's rights, gay rights, environment, you know, environmental stuff. And then, of course, we had the Vietnam War along the way. You know, we had a couple of bumps in the road, obviously. But there was basically an arc towards, you know, progress ever since World War II. You know, like I say, with some problems here and there.
Sure.
But the general feeling was every day was going to be better. You know, it was an optimism built into the 60s, you know, and I call it a Renaissance period, and I don't do that lightly. I mean, it's the greatest art being made was also the most commercial, you know, that'll never happen again. And it was in the air, man. I mean, you were floating, you know, 6 inches off the ground all the time because of the great music all over the place, you know, every genre, just extraordinary stuff. And all the arts, really, you know, film, books, you know, all that was going on, you know. And that, you know, we took it for granted, of course. But looking back now, you know, there was no AIDS, you know, there was no COVID, there was no Trump, you know, there was no, you know, QAnon, It was reasonably sane, you know, and we managed to.
And the music, you know, was better too.
Oh my God! You know, I mean, people wonder why you get occasionally nostalgic. You know, I tell people I'm not nostalgic. I just never left the '60s. You know, I'm still there. You know, I'm not nostalgic about it. But anyway, all of that was. You know, we were extremely lucky. I mean, as a kid in a rock band, we had dozens of places to play, you know, dozens. all kinds of, you know, high school dances and VFW halls. And they were teenage nightclubs built for our generation. I mean, I don't think there's been any such thing before or since, you know. Before you even got to the bars and the whole booze and drinking thing, they were teenage nightclubs, you know. So we were extremely lucky, and I feel a lot of gratitude. And that's why one reason I started my radio, my two radio formats, partly to turn people on to the greatest music ever made, which is no longer on the radio, really, in large part. You know,
underground, I mean, what's on the,
sorry?
Underground Garage and Outlaw Country. We want to make sure that people know that.
Yeah. I have a syndicated show, The Underground Garage, and it's in still 70 radio affiliates in 100 countries. But the main things are the two channels on Sirius Satellite, you know. And you know, when it comes to rock music and even country music, you know, nothing wrong with what's being played. I mean, it's fine, but it's 10%, maybe edging towards 15 or 20% of the greatest music ever made. The other 80%, you know, I felt needs a venue, you know. So I started those two channels to get the other 80% on the radio. Interestingly,
you did a wonderful job with that.
Thank you. And interestingly, you don't have this problem with jazz. You know, it's funny how it turns out, you know, jazz at one time was sort of the really underground cult, right? You know, and actually it's easier to find jazz on the radio than any other, you know, than certainly than rock and roll. You know, you can't find rock and roll on the radio other than my channel. It doesn't exist, you know. There's classic rock and they're great, you know, and we're part of that. You know, but that's, they played 300-400 records, you know, 500 records, you know, I got 5,000, 6,000 in my format. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, what works, for them, is fine. But, you know, it's easy to find, you know, jazz for some reason never lost, you know, never was never compromised. The greatest jazz has always been available for some reason, which is great. You know, I love that. So I started the thing basically out of gratitude. You know, I want to. You know, in the end, I really feel we're, this generation has been, you know. It's not a lot of fun, you know. I mean, we need to get fun back into the world. You know, the world is just so damn boring. You know, aside from the tragedies, you know, and we spend all day with the tragedies, and there's no fun. I mean, and this is before COVID. You know, forget about COVID. You know, forget about this virus. This I'm talking about before the virus. Things were boring and you know, and we need to get some kind of fun back into the world, man, because it's just too damn boring. I'm sorry, you know.
Well, your channels are helping, you know. My Lady Rose, she's always saying, that's the song. Well, I heard that on the Underground Garage or Outlaw Country. Big fan of both stations. I want to summarize your career for you, and you tell me if this is right. And it's so hard because it's so vast, but some will call it fate, but gut instinct, I think, and fearlessness has helped you turn you into the star that you are today. So let me explain, and I'd like you to comment then. After you got Southside Johnny signed, you decided you would go with Bruce Springsteen because he needed a guitarist. He was going to front the band. So you made that decision, supposed to be a 7-gig kind of event thing that turned into a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame career. You accepted a challenge, kind of, from a phone call from David Chase saying, I want you to be a part of The Sopranos. And you say, well, I'm not really an actor. Okay, I'm going to do it. And you helped make The Sopranos one of the best TV series in history. Then you got a phone call from a producer in England. I don't even know who his name is. But he wanted you to play at Bill Wyman's birthday party. And you had a long hiatus from music. And that led to the revival of Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul. and what you said have been probably the most productive years of your life. So your gut instinct, those decisions that you made three different times, changed the course of your career, but were all successful.
Yeah. And I wish I could tell you I planned that, you know, to tell you how smart I am. But, you know, I'm usually, you know, over here, you know, making all these plans and, you know, and my life comes through the back door, you know. Same thing with Lillehammer. I'm mixing a band on my label in Bergen, Norway, you know, on the West Coast. And somebody says, hey, there's a husband and wife in the lobby to say hello. I go out and say hello. They say, hey, we wrote a TV show for you. You know, you wrote a TV show for me? You know, that's a good day at the office, right?
And is that and, fun? Lillehammer, you know, if you haven't caught it, folks, you have to catch that series. It was the original first series on Netflix. And that's it's right. And it's hilarious.
Yeah, thank you. But again, you know, these things just kind of happen to me. I don't know. I'm like I say, I'm in the luckiest generation, and the luck continues. So,
the Rock and Roll Rebel box set, a lot of new tracks, maybe 50 or so, right?
Yeah. They found a bunch of things I didn't even know about.
So when you listen to the first time you listen back to the whole album, what memory popped into your mind first?
Well, we included, this also has the DVDs, right? That package has three shows in it also. From the first tour, you know, the Remember That Women tour, the Voice of America tour, and the Freedom No Compromise tour of 82, 84, and 87. So seeing those concerts of, you know, I've had several different versions of the Disciples of Soul through the years. I was quite surprised, really, how good those bands were. I mean, they were really, really good right from the beginning.
And relevant, too, to today.
Well, yeah. The songs held up quite well, unfortunately, because a lot of them were, you know... Like I said on tour this time, when I wrote "I Am a Patriot" in 1984, I thought that was as bad as things could get. You know,
yeah. Little
boy,
did you
was I wrong about that. But you know, so I mean, the music held up well, and the bands themselves were just really, really quite good, and you know. The only missing element was I never had a manager, and that was the big flaw of my life. Cause you know, you can create the content but that's only half the story. You know, the other half of the story is marketing that content. And it's really not even two different things. It's kind of two halves of the same thing, you know? So I'll make the content all day long, but I can't go out and sell myself, you know. I can sell my Teach Rock, you know, .org curriculum, or you know, I can, you know, help out whatever, you know, but I can't do it for myself. And so I never had that advocate, which is the main job of a manager, you know, aside from the business, you know, you need that. Every artist needs an advocate. And I never had that, and that was my big flaw, which is a shame because certainly any one of those bands, you know, could have been more successful. And certainly by 87, by the Freedom No Compromise album, I look back at that band, I'm like, wow. I was really, you know, I turned into a really good front man, which was not my inclination. You know, I never had that inclination to be the front man. I like working behind the scenes and being the, you know, the consigliere or the underboss, you know,
You don't even consider yourself a musician, really, do you? You're more of a writer, producer.
Yeah, I would not insult real musicians by calling myself a musician, you know. I'm a rock and roll guitar player, you know. That's not exactly a musician, you know.
How many people are out there going, oh, I could have managed his career if I had known he needed somebody. Somebody who's been with you through thick and thin, and mostly good stuff, is your wife, Maureen. And she's an actress, and she's also was in The Sopranos with you playing your wife. But now that you've got something different now, you have a whole new thing that you're doing online, and it's a lot of fun. Can you tell us a little bit about the Renegade Theater Company's Lovers and Other Strangers play that you're doing on Zoom?
Yeah, my wife's theater company, she has a theater company with Vinny Pastor, you know, big pussy from Sopranos. And they've had a terrific company that has done various projects. Lovers and Other Strangers was something that she asked me to direct. So I guess that's still up somewhere to be seen,
yeah,
hopefully.
It's on Facebook, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they have a new thing out now, which is the Rock and Roll Christmas Carol, which they just did, which is really quite hilarious. So people should look that up also.
And all dealing with the challenges of being online.
Yeah, it was really fascinating to, you know, transfer the theater thing to Zoom. You know, it took a minute because everybody's in a separate, you know, a separate house. And, you know, how do you interact with each other? You know, how do people, you know, kiss each other? How do they, you know? And that was a fascinating challenge. But they're really getting technologically, you know, they're getting very good at it, as you'll see in this Rock and Roll Christmas Carol. They really, there's some moments that, like, you know, really quite impressive in terms of the technology. And it's a great performances, of course, also. But yeah, Maureen's been my partner with a lot of productions also. She's really a good producer. She produced the Once Upon a Dream, the Rascal show we did on Broadway. And we then produced a show for Eddie Brigati, one of the singers from the Rascals, who had a cabaret show. We produced that together. And, you know, we've done a lot of things together as far as producers also. But she's a great actress and a great her theater group is just so much fun. Everybody in the theater group is just terrific.
I guess when you have Bruce Springsteen as your best man and Little Richard as your celebrant, I guess that means it's going to be a successful marriage, right?
Right. Started off the right way.
Not bad. Not bad, Stephen. So let's have you and Maureen go back in time because you're a music history buff. You can go and you can be in the concert as a performer, or you can sit in the audience. Where are you two going? What performance, what concert, what group or thing would you go back in time to be a part of?
Well, I missed a few things. She really didn't. I think she probably saw.
She saw the Beatles in 60 at Shea Stadium, right?
Well, yeah, she saw them in 65. I saw them in 66 at Shea Stadium. So we both did that. But I missed a couple of really important moments. I missed Bob Dylan with the band, you know, which I would have loved to have seen. That was one of the high points of rock history. I missed the Yardbirds, you know, completely. I never saw the Yardbirds live with any of either Clapton or Beck or Page. And there was a minute where Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page were both in the band for a very, very brief time. So Maureen saw them. Who else did I never saw James Brown live, and Maureen saw him.
Is there a jazz performer? Is there a jazz performer that you would want to go back and see?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'd like to go back and see the Miles Davis, you know, quintet, you know, with Herbie Hancock and Tony Williams and Ron Carter, you know, who I reunited, you know, when Miles walked in, another greatest moment of my life, Miles Davis walked into the studio to do Sun City, which was, you know, my dream. You know, I in my head, I had him in the intro of the song and the middle. I guess I should say, you know, for those of the younger people out there, Sun City was a project we did. I was the head of Artists United Against Apartheid, and it was a political record with a lot of artists on it to deal with the South African situation at the time when Nelson Mandela was still in jail, and it was basically slavery going on down there. So we needed to fix that. Anyway, we had a big political record, and I had Miles Davis. Hopefully, you know, I was hoping he would come in. I heard him in the intro of the song, and again in the middle. And so he came in, and he played for like 5 minutes. And I'm like, well, I'm not leaving 4.5 minutes of Miles Davis on the floor. So I went to a friend of mine, and I said, can we kind of reunite one of his quintets, you know, to get Herbie Hancock? And we did. We brought in Herbie Hancock, came in, and Tony Williams and Ron Carter, and played to what Miles had played, you know, to. Miles had played to like a log drum we had that everybody kind of played to who came in. And so we had them play, you know, and kind of, you know, create something out of what Miles had played. And that's on the Sun City album, which is part of the Rock and Roll Rebel package also. And we're gonna do a whole special on Sun City, reissue, because we have all kinds of interviews with almost everybody on the record, and half of whom are gone tragically. You know, so we're gonna redo that whole Sun City package, maybe this year.
Wow.
Or next year, 2021. But yeah. So I would love to have seen them live, you name it. I didn't see a lot of jazz growing up when those cats were in their prime, you know, Coltrane or, you know, Charlie Parker or any of them really. I'd like to have seen the Jazz Crusaders, who was one of my favorites, or, you know, even Ramsey Lewis, you know, Getz and Joe Beam I didn't see much jazz. I didn't really get into jazz till later.
You get it now, though, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I go all the way back now to Louis Armstrong's Hot Five, Hot Seven, you know, and start there, you know. So, yeah. So, yeah. Thanks to my education from you and Gary Walker and PGO.
So, before we wrap this up, I'm going to give you the stage to talk to teachers right now. You're having this special event honoring them on Monday night. What do you want to say to teachers during COVID as they struggle, but yet, you know, are doing some fantastic work?
Yeah, well, we thank you as we do every day, and we can't thank you enough. You are truly unsung heroes. The nurses and doctors obviously are on the front lines of this particular situation, but you are just behind them in terms of importance, keeping our children and our students connected to the world, which is, it's got to be very disorienting for many, many kids. I think a lot of, you know, mental problems are popping up because of the disorientation. So, you know, the more you can stay connected, the better. And I know you're making every effort to do that. And, I love the fact that you've told me that, you know, not only are our lesson plans working for you, but they work for the parents. Half the time, the parents and the kids are taking these lessons together, because the parents are trapped at home also. So they're able to, you know, enjoy these lessons with their kids. And that's rare, you know, to find something that parents and kids can do together. And so I thank you for letting me know that, you know, what we're doing is worthwhile, but it's all for you. You know, we're hoping that I'm hoping for a big change. I'm very, very thrilled that, you know, Dr. Jill Biden, is a teacher, and I've spoken with her. We had a seminar together, and I really think things are going to change for the better in terms of the status of teachers in general because of First Lady coming in January 20th. So that's extremely exciting, and I'm certainly hoping that we can pay you what you deserve. And I know that's not why you do it, you know. I think teaching,
it would help though, wouldn't it?
it never hurts. You know, it's similar to music. You know, we don't start off playing music for the money, you know? And to this day, I mean, now things have gotten full circle. I mean, we've introduced over 1,000 new bands, and there's very little possibility that they can make a living playing rock and roll these days, but there's still 1,000 bands doing it, 1,000, you know, over the past 20 years. So we want to support them even more because of that, you know, because they're doing it out of passion. So teaching is like music and like the arts in general. I think you do it out of passion first. Yeah, it's nice if you can make a living, and we got to make sure that you can make a living. Because obviously, you know, you need that stability in order to be at your best, and we know that. So we're always working at that, and we're going to continue working at that forever. And so I, you know, any way we can show our gratitude, we do it.
Passion is the key word with Stephen Van Zandt. Anybody that has seen him perform with Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band know that those 3-hour shows that have become so famous, they just never disappoint, and the passion and energy is there. Stand with Teachers, more than 2-hour event online this Monday night at 8:00. You can go to teachrock.org to get more information about tickets and to donate, and tax deductible. Be able to stream the event on demand for 3 days. So on behalf of all your fans, including Dave Popkin, who's in Nutley, who proudly displays the Disciples of Soul poster in his home, and talks to everybody about his love of you and Bruce and everything that's connected with that, and all your fans here on WBGO, much success with this event Monday night. Once again, teachrock.org. It's been a pleasure to talk to Stephen Van Zandt. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend.